everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the show where we talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, and books until we can't talk about it no more. I am Dan Suck, the editor of WindowsComing.net, here with Daniel Roman, the other editor of WindowsComing.net, and here with all of you, including Victor, Julie Davies, Chris, Zach, and others. Dan, how are you today?
I'm doing spectacularly. Nice to see you, Dan. Nice to see everybody in the chat. It's an exciting week in the sci-fi and fantasy world. So, yeah, I'm doing good. I'm excited for our show. How are you? How are things?
Things are good. We were off last week because I was away in... where was I? I was in Phoenix, Arizona.
In the sunny Southlands.
For a retreat for the Fansided group. We went to corporate meetings and we talked about, you know, synergy and SEO and team building. And we did karaoke and bowling and I sung Whitney Houston. And it went really well.
Awesome. It sounds like it was a magical time. It really does. I was here, man, the worst one. But I'm happy for you that you got to go get your vitamin C. Vitamin D, whatever vitamin you get from the sun. I'm glad you got that.
At least one person found a scorpion in their shoe.
Nice. I hear that they like hitchhike sometimes. I've seen people be like, make sure to check your bags if you're traveling to anywhere with scorpions because they're known. They have a reputation on the street for sneaking into luggage. But I'm glad that didn't happen to anyone.
They're really small. They're almost like bug size. They're not like huge the way you see in the movies. They're like very tiny things.
Yes.
They could be anywhere. They could be under your seat right now.
I came very close to sitting on a scorpion one time in a bathroom. But that's a story for another day. what are we going to talk about? We'll table that one.
Okay. We have a lot to go over. We're going to give you our early review of the last season two. The both of us have seen the season. You've seen the whole thing. I've seen about half of it. Cool. But before we do that, let's visit Westeros, because in the week I was gone, quite a lot happened. Namely, House of the Dragon season 3 has begun full production. The cameras are rolling. People are walking around. They're in their costumes. They're in their wigs. They're saying their lines, which is great. I'm looking forward to it. I know that when we discuss House of the Dragon, we tend to get down on it for a lot of reasons. And I think there are still reasons to be a little wary. Recently, Alan Taylor, the director who did The Red Dragon and the Gold, kind of confirmed again that there were going to be 10 episodes. He was going to direct the 9th.
Oh, really?
Probably going to be the Battle of the Gullet. And then he actually got assigned The Red Dragon and the Gold after they cut those two, which just kind of tells you like how deep into production they must have been before the change came along. Again, one of those mysteries, it's hard to know exactly why it happened, but I do kind of feel for them. It's not easy to adjust when like a big part of your plan goes out the window. At least this time they'll be able to just plan and execute front to back instead of having it scrambled in the middle.
Hopefully. Yeah, I mean, it definitely, you know, House of the Dragon season 2 went into production kind of at this awkward phase right before the Hollywood strikes, which were not the cause for the cuts, but right where Hollywood was essentially contracting in anticipation of these strikes. And Warner Brothers Discovery had just gotten a new CEO who was very gung-ho about cutting down costs and all that sort of stuff. So I hadn't heard that about Alan Taylor. That is
pretty
interesting,
new.
Saddening, but also somewhat unsurprising, because I don't even want to say an open secret. It's a common knowledge at this point that the season was originally planned with 10. It got cut down to 8. The Gullet was supposed to be in season 2. And the Gullet, for viewers, listeners who may not know, very important naval battle that happens in Fire and Blood, that kind of always seemed like the logical end point to season 2 to me, to you, I think, to anyone, whenever we discussed this before the season was out, it was always like, they'll probably try to hit the Gullet and get to some action in King's Landing before the end of the season. So what that all means is that season 3 is filming now, and they're being very open about the fact that they are doing the Gullet right at the top of the season. They're potentially filming it as like, it seems like one of their first like big things they're filming, because it'll probably be in, I assume, episode one, two at the latest, but probably episode one.
There's no time to waste, man. And they are hyping it up. Ryan Condal, the showrunner, is talking about, he's saying, I would like to think this is probably the most complex sequence that's ever been done on television. Not necessarily the most expensive or the longest shoot or anything like that. Just based on the number of moving pieces, the amount of different disciplines, media that have to be blended together to achieve success, because you're talking about seeing ships and dragons in action. So I'm sure it'll be great. Of course, you can do whatever you want, Daniel.
So the quotes we're going to talk about from Ryan Condal, they came out last week. He did, when the season started filming, he did this interview with Entertainment Weekly where he talked about these things. But we didn't have a show last week, so we're talking about some of them now. I won't lie, and maybe this is like a snooty cinephile thing of me, but I kind of like, I read that and I scoffed a little. There are a few things Ryan Condal said where I was like, I really like Condal. I like a lot of the things he's doing with the show, but he says, I'm like, I don't know if this makes me think better or worse of what you guys are doing. And this, like, it's probably the most complex sequence that's ever been done on television. Like, am I the only one who's skeptical of that? Like, we're talking about the franchise that did The Long Night, which was like a renowned, like, you know, 60-day night shoot with thousands of extras and moving parts and stuff. So am I the only one who's like, is that like blowing, you know, smoke?
I mean,
kind of.
Between the two of us, you're the only one who thinks that. I think you're allowed to think you're doing a really complex thing. And boats are hard, man.
That's
like,
true.
Historically, like movie battles on sea, very rare, because it's hard. You would think get out there and like cameras on the ocean to simulate it. I did not read this as
okay. Snooty. Fair. Well, no. I'm saying I'm being snooty, not him. I think that's totally fair to be excited about it. I am cautiously skeptical, and I hope that it lives up to the hype that he's selling, because there've been some other really incredible battles in this franchise, other series. But you're right about the boats. You're right about the ships, as it were. I think
ships are a kind of boat.
Yeah, boats are kind of ship. Thrones in particular has not really had a great history with naval battles. We've only gotten a couple of small ones throughout kind of the overall franchise, and they've tended to be like some of the less good ones. Like, I was spoiled because here comes my name drop for the week. That other show with ships, Black Sails, actually took people to South Africa, and like they had ships, so they did their ship battles actually on the sea. And it's hard to replicate that in a studio.
I imagine, yeah.
But yeah, I hope that the Battle of the Gullet breaks that trend for Thrones, and this is its first truly notable sea battle for the franchise. So we'll see.
A big sea battle on TV would be groundbreaking. I can't really think of another one. I haven't seen Black Sails even once. I don't like you. I've seen it like 12 times.
Yep.
But I'm going to bet they're going to try to have a bit more shock and awe. But we'll see. They also touched on the ongoing feud between Ryan Condal, the showrunner of House of the Dragon, and George R. R. Martin, the author of the source material. Man, this is wild, where George R. R. Martin started to complain publicly late last year about the direction of the show. And it's kind of been quiet since then, but Condal finally addressed it. Basically, Martin thinks it's going too far afield of his book. And I kind of agree. I do, again, I sympathize, because it's hard to tell like how much of that is them making choices that take the show in other directions, and how much is scrambling to try and meet some kind of corporate edict. I bet it's a little of both, but there is some bad blood back and forth going on. And Condal said of the feud, I will simply say, I made every effort to include George in the adaptation process. I really did, over years and years. And we really enjoyed a mutually fruitful, I thought, really strong collaboration for a long time. But at some point, as we got deeper down the road, he just became unwilling to acknowledge the practical issues at hand in a reasonable way. And I think as a showrunner, I had to keep my practical producer hat on and my creative writer, lover of the material hat on at the same time. At the end of the day, I just have to keep marching not only the writing process forward, but also the practical parts of the process forward for the sake of the crew, the cast, and for HBO, because that's my job. So I can only hope that George and I can rediscover that harmony someday. But that's all I have to say about it.
Yeah, that's all he has to say about it.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Should GLP-1 weight loss medication like Wegovy and Zepbound cost thousands of dollars? We don't think so. Try LifeMD.com helps provide insurance access to the leading GLP-1 medications. Visit TryLifeMD.com and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0. Listen to Bridget's story after losing 55 pounds and using her insurance for coverage.
LifeMD helped me get covered with my insurance. Finding out that it was covered was huge. I've lost 55 pounds. I am so much healthier now that I've lost the weight. I would never be able to do it without them.
Get started today and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0 at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
So I think Condal's being truthful here. I think sure. It is his job to keep the ship moving in the right direction for the show. Like, I think you're right. What you said about that, it's a half, you know, corporate thing, half creative thing. I'm sure there's truth to that. I do always shake my head a little bit. And I had this reaction when this story initially broke last year and HBO did its very quick damage control. And they had that very transparent damage control episode of like how hard it is to adapt Fire and Blood for television, that podcast episode that happened to drop the same day as Martin's blog post. I feel like there are practical things that are absolutely valid that the show is going to have to change, but I think it doesn't seem reasonable to me to not give is Martin really just totally being unreasonable about all of these things because he's worked in television. So he strikes me as much more aware of these practical things than the average like author working with a show would be that's adapting his material. So that's why I saw this and I was like, I don't love this. But I already wrote about this last week. Dan, what is your opinion? What is your take on all of this?
Oh, I've written about it too. I'm going to link my article. I mean, I like that we have debates in the chat with Chris being more on George or Martin's side and Victor being more on Condal's side. I'm more on Martin's side because I think that show has strayed from the book quite a bit. I always cite the Allison and Rhaenyra are working together thing.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Again, it's one thing to streamline or change things, combine things, cut things, add things in a way that makes a story easier to digest. It's another thing to take a conflict, Allison and Rhaenyra against each other, and turn it into they're working together. That's not streamlining. That's just the opposite of what happens in the source material. So yeah. I don't really think there's a way to talk around that and justify it as you gotta change things to make TV. Like that seems like you're taking the story and you're making a new story. But it's also true that TV is hard. It's also true that they're working under a lot of pressure and have a lot of boxes to check. I'm betting it's like when we were talking about like how much of it is corporate inspired and how much of it is just creatively doing their own thing. It seems like it's like 60-30, or rather 66.6 repeating, 33.3 repeating.
Nice.
Two-thirds
we do
creative,
on this show.
One-third corporate. It's my like guess, but I don't know these people. I just want the show to be good. And again, I've said before, like if Rhaenyra and Allison getting together, working together really worked well, I wouldn't really mind if they changed everything. If it was like smashingly successful and I loved it, but it's completely different from the source material and it kind of makes no sense. So these two things are not good.
Yeah, I think that is a very good rule of thumb. Like it doesn't need to be slavishly faithful. I think the show has gotten into trouble where it's like treating Martin's book like a literal history book they have to interpret instead of being like, we could just ask George about these things, like blood and cheese. So Leo in the chat said, practical or not practical, there are writing issues that can't do that much damage to the budget, aka blood and cheese, the ending of season two. Blood and cheese is one of my absolute perfect examples of how this is not just a practical budgetary keeping the ship moving thing, because like there are like specific lines in blood and cheese. Like the easy example is in the book, Helena begs for her children's lives. She says, kill me instead. In the show, she's just like, I have a necklace that you could like, maybe, you know,
would you and, cut that.
And I understand like the kind of angle they're going for is she's so in shock that she doesn't know what to do. But I think it's just like, it's just a much less compelling scene. Like I think they probably could have still had the really good lines and the shock without just like a much lamer version of this still very traumatic, very, you know, intense scene. Like there are parts of it that are practical. Like no one wanted to see little Jaehaerys get beheaded on screen. Like that was a really good choice to have that be off screen. But you know, there are other smaller things or conceptual things like Allison and Rhaenyra. To me is another really good example of this. So spoilers here for Fire and Blood. In the book, Rhaenyra takes King's Landing, and one of the first things she does when she takes King's Landing is take Alicent prisoner. And then their dynamic is, we haven't seen each other since this war started. Now you're my prisoner. What's this like for us? And the show has kind of ruined that for itself. Like even if they still do that plot line, because we've had Allison and Rhaenyra like try to work together throughout season two, it's gonna have and maybe they can prove me wrong on this, I would love to be proved wrong, but I think the impact is going to be far less than it would have been if they just were close friends and then they didn't see each other until this very specific, very terrible dynamic comes onto screen, which is Allison is Rhaenyra's prisoner, and what does Rhaenyra do with that?
I agree, and that's why I don't really buy Condell saying all the changes are kind of the result of you have to do this to adapt. They're changing things because they want to change things, and they're not making good decisions. But I still like it, and there are other things. Like I wonder if, like the blood and cheese thing, like maybe they would have added in the Helena bit had they been allowed to write new dialogue on the set because they could film, but they couldn't write anything new because of the strikes. And they had episodes cut, so maybe this next season will be, I mean, it'll definitely be more coherent. So hope for the best.
Hopefully this season is a good step in the right direction for House of the Dragon. Season two definitely had highlights. The Red Dragon and the Gold is an incredible episode of television still. I think it has to win a little faith back after the last season finale. And can I just, have you thought about this? So Maelor Targaryen, who is the youngest son of Helena, that was one of the things Martin specifically took issue with. The show cut him. He's involved in Blood and Cheese. He's also involved in this later set piece called Bitter Bridge, which is really awful, but important. And Martin kind of spoke about that. Have you thought about the fact? So George Martin has this anecdote he uses to describe book to screen adaptations and how they're both equal versions of a story, like they're different versions. Scarlett O'Hara's children.
Sure.
So in Gone with the Wind, she has however many children. The screen version, she has like one less child. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about the fact that like Martin, who's been using this description for years, he basically like manifested himself a Scarlett O'Hara with this story because Helena has three kids in the book and she has two kids in the show. And it's going to cause all these issues he's unhappy with.
I have not. I think it's a fun parallel you've noticed.
Yeah. Anyway, we do have other stuff to talk about. Unless do you have any other thoughts on Martin before we move on to more Martin?
No. More fun thing. I agree with Chris, though. Remember that season one, episode 7, when Allison comes running with the dagger? Loved it.
Yeah.
More of that. That was
It's
hot.
Still their best scene. It's their best scene in the show together,
I think. No, it's not. It's their best scene, sure.
Their best scene. Sorry, Allison, adult Allison and Rhaenyra's best scene together. And that was like, I think like their first one they filmed too. But that just had the magic, that scene.
Yeah, that was hot. That was great. More of that. More people hating people. More blood, yes. More silence, more bad feeling. Come on, embrace it. It happens. Anyway, in happier news, dire wolves are real. Do you know that?
I will admit, I love me some dinosaurs. I did not know dire wolves are real. I thought they were mythic beasts. But they've been in the news a lot this week. Why have they been in the news, Dan?
Because a company called Colossal Laboratories and Biosciences took some ancient direwolf DNA, direwolves, which is to say giant ass wolves that are stronger and bigger than normal wolves, were living in the Americas around 13,000 years ago, and they died around the time the last ice age ended. They went extinct. But they were real. Obviously, George R. R. Martin kind of used them. They're real in Westeros, man.
They are indeed. I knew that.
All the Stark kids have one. Most of them died. But this company, Colossal Biosciences, took ancient DNA, kind of took modern gray wolves and edited some things in CRISPR, gestated them in the wombs of... What? That's what it's called. You know what CRISPR is, right?
Yeah, I thought you were making a joke. I knew that was a thing that people like Elon Musk used. I didn't know that that's actually what they used on the direwolves.
Yeah.
I take back my scoff.
Gestated them in the wombs of, I think, some like, I don't know what kind of dog, but like a real normal dog. And they birthed new direwolves. They created a trio of new direwolves, two brothers named Romulus and Remus, and then a younger sister named Khaleesi, of course, after the Daenerys Targaryen, one of her titles. And they're here and they're real. And Colossal is both full of great scientists and great marketers because they photographed the brothers, Remus and Romulus, on the Iron Throne. And that Iron Throne is owned by Peter Jackson, who bought it for $1.5 million in an auction last year in like a bidding war. And he lent it to them and they put the direwolves on it and they took a picture. This, I don't know if this is a better scientific miracle or a marketing miracle.
They
thought this through. They like, how do we get the most maximum coverage for our rebirth of direwolves, which by itself is just science and science is boring. Get them on the Iron Throne because direwolves are from the show. Genius. I think I like it more as a marketing stunt than a scientific achievement.
Yeah, I have to be honest with you. I agree. And Jada Dan is like, man, did they pick dire? Because they were trying to do other species. Like, did they partially pick direwolves because they knew people would know direwolves from Game of Thrones, and everyone would love to see that? Because the story behind the story, and I don't even mean the science. The science is interesting, obviously,
of course.
But the for us in our Nerdville with keeping track of things like Martin and Peter Jackson and whoever, like, this story has felt like the gift that keeps on giving. Cause like, we didn't know before this that Peter Jackson was the person who won the auction for the Iron Throne for $1.5 million last year when earlier this year. I don't remember when it happened.
Last year,
when HBO was selling off props from the show, he got this Iron Throne. And I guess he got involved with this organization. He lent them his Iron Throne. He also called up George R. R. Martin and said, hey, I can't tell you what this company's doing, but I think you'll think it's really cool and you should call them. And Martin apparently, in his words, he could hear the excitement in Peter Jackson's voice, so he called them. And then he got involved with this too. And obviously, it's all very exciting. Martin has seemed absolutely tickled over this whole thing, and like, who wouldn't be? He put these you know, these cool extinct creatures into his novels, and now several are debatably around. I say debatably because the scientific communities have been hotly debating, you know, are these direwolves, are these genetically modified gray wolves, which is what they are. They are gray wolves that had their genes modified to more closely resemble dire wolves in size and in coloration and traits and all those other things. But it's still an interesting story. But yeah, you're right. The marketing is ridiculous for this.
Genius. Like,
for example, we've got another picture here. You can't make this up. This is gold right here. This is bargaining gold. That's George R. R. Martin holding a dire wolf pup, exuding
absolute
joy.
Genius.
Yeah.
Absolute genius.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course you'd be emotional. You'd be emotional seeing a species that had been extinct for 10,000 years back and in your arms, even if you didn't get rich writing a book series that featured dire wolves. And I'm sure it's even closer for George R. R. Martin. What a fun picture. He's going to get that framed. I mean, it's cool that we can, I don't know, sort of revive, if you want to call this that, extinct species. It's even cooler, though, good marketing and good penetration.
Yes. And this, it's funny, this picture, because we live in this age of like AI and our picture is real. I showed this to my wife earlier and she was like, I thought that was an AI picture because that's how fantastical this thing is. Like, how could this be real? It's George R. R. Martin holding the little baby dire wolf. I think regardless of your opinions on the science, because I think there are absolutely questions to be raised. This whole story is basically the plot. Like, it's not like they can release these direwolves. Like, they are living on an undisclosed location preserve somewhere in the Americas, Northern Americas, that's, you know, they can't get out of in theory, but life does sometimes find a way. So who knows what will happen? But I still think it's cause for oohs and ahs and is a
it
pretty
is cause
nice
for
thing.
Oohs and ahs. You're right. It is fully Jurassic. Like, people are saying, like, bring back dinosaurs next. And I'm like, I saw that movie. Didn't you see the movies? It never goes well. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, I guess.
Yeah. And I do have to shout out Victor here in the chat, who said Khaleesi, who is a dragon, not a wolf, which, Khaleesi is one of Danny's titles. If only there was a Game of Thrones wolf name to draw from, Nymeria was right there. And I will say, I had the same exact thought, Victor, when I read that. I was like, Khaleesi, it's not even a name. And I know it's become a popular name because of the show, but it's something that's always irked me because it's a title. It's not a name. I know lots of people call Danny Khaleesi, but I'm like,
I will
not
say
you too, colossal bioscientist.
Ben Lamb, the CEO of the company, he was clearly a dork and a Game of Thrones fan, did kind of explain it. He said,
Well,
we could have called one of the brothers Ghost because they are white. They do look like Ghost. But then we would have had to call the other brother because they were twins. And then we didn't want only the one brother to get attention. So again, he's thinking like a marketer.
Wow. He didn't want favoritism between his wolf twin, his little boyos.
So they called them Romulus and Remus, which are the mythic founding brothers Rome. Yeah. And then for the sister, he did say, we thought of calling her Lady Sansa's dire wolf, but Lady dies, so we didn't want to have that like association.
I mean,
he didn't mention Nymeria, true. Like, he could have called her Nymeria. That would have been the obvious one.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it would have. Nymeria lives a long, happy life in the show, at least. She goes off to live in the forest with all the other wolves, which hopefully is not, maybe they didn't want to jinx this dire wolf. They're giving it the name of the one that gets out and then goes to live in the forest with all the normal wolves.
That'd be bad.
Fair. See, there are levels to this. Chris says snow. Yeah, that's a thought too. Snow the wolf.
I just want you to know that he did think about this.
Yes. I appreciate that.
And come to the wrong conclusion, but he did think.
He at least considered it. I do feel better knowing that, because when I first read this, I was like, why did you just pick the most popular Game of Thrones baby name? Like, how did this happen? So I feel better. I feel better now that you've told me that. I can finally lay my very dorky grumbles about this to rest and just be happy for Martin and these three dire wolves that are hopefully, or these three genetically modified gray wolves, don't come at me, scientists. These three cute pooches, how about that?
They're cute.
Who are hopefully going to live their life and not start an ecological crisis in whatever place they are.
Listen, humans have five senses, and to my five senses, it's a big, strong wolf that looks like a dire wolf. Is it genetically identical to the dire wolves that were around 10,000 years ago? I can't tell. I don't have a microscope. Potato, potato. I'll go ahead and go with it.
Yeah.
As close as I'm going to get.
It is fun that it is basically the first that I'm aware of real instance of this is a real life Jurassic Park moment. And how do we reconcile with that as humans and consumers of this news and what have you? Because like you can find like online, like the method they used for making these mm-hmm. dogs. And it is basically the exact way they made the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park. Except with some slight differences, obviously, because those were reptiles and they used amphibian DNA. These are mammals. But yeah. Man, it's too bad Michael Crichton is not around to weigh in.
I don't know, he died. They do want to do woolly mammoths next, so stay tuned.
Yeah.
Okay, this video is titled The Last of a Season 2 Early Review, so let's get to it.
Yes.
The Last of Us Season 2 debuts this Sunday, April 13th at HBO and Max. Adapted from the extremely popular Last of Us games from Naughty Dog. The first season adapted the first game in its entirety. The second season will adapt part of the second game, which is much bigger. The show just got new for a third season, so it's going to be
just today.
To adapt this game just today. You have seen the entire second season, I think.
I have
seen episodes, 4 out of 7 episodes. Daniel, what are your just base level instinctual boil it down reactions? Did you like it or not?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I thought this was a great season. I think the actors are all fantastic. The standout for me was probably Isabella Merced as Dina. I think she's real scene stealer as Dina and has amazing chemistry with Bella Ramsey, who also does an excellent job as Ellie this season. I know there were discussions about whether Bella Ramsey is, you know, big enough or old enough or whatever to play Ellie, because the Ellie of this video game is a much more weathered person. She's a much more quiet and serious person, but she's also 19. Bella Ramsey is, I think, 21 now. And they were
19 when she filmed this. Yeah.
So the literal right age for this. Mm-hmm. I will say, I think Bella Ramsey sells Ellie's goofiness for me a little bit better than Ellie's darkness, because this is a very dark season for Ellie. Mm-hmm. But I think that, yeah. It's really good. I think people are going to really enjoy it. I think the biggest issue with this season is that it's only 7 episodes, which, as someone who's played the game, I completely understand why that's the case, but I'm curious to see how people receive it.
I want to ask you a question that I hope doesn't break any spoiler embargoes.
Oh,
but I'm curious because I haven't seen the entire thing yet. Does it end this season in a way where you're like, that's it? Or does it end in a way where you're like, oh, I can't wait until it comes back?
More the second one.
Okay.
More the second one. I don't want to talk about how it's structured or
how
it
ends.
I will not. I will say that I enjoyed it a lot. I like the decisions they made. I think, you know, so The Last of Us Part 2 is a much bigger game than the first one. It's kind of sprawling. But it's less episodic as well. Like the first game mm-hmm. is very episodic, where it's like Joel and Ellie in a different location and there are like 9 or 10 of them. So it copies very, very cleanly, to television. The second game is not structured the same. It is not as neatly episodic. It is much more ambitious with what it does with its narrative. And I think it also has a lot more moments of, like, I don't want to say gamey moments, but like moments where it's like obvious, like gamer things that are going along versus like just the strict narrative of the first one. So I think this season had harder decisions to make about how it was going to adapt the story. And I think for the most part, it made really inspired choices with that. There are moments, there are people who've played the game will recognize a lot of moments that they love from the game.
Some of them like, they look dead on. I've recognized a couple that are from the game. And there are stuff that's added, but like some of the stuff that's from the game is like, wow, you really wanted to recreate this as precisely as you possibly could. There's a musical moment I'm thinking of that was so close. It almost felt redundant.
And I agree with that. And there are others that they recreated very closely, but which resonate a little bit better, I think, even than the game, because of the they polished them a little more. So Leo says linear or non-linear season. That's exactly the sort of question I am not going to answer. Because the narrative structure of The Last of Us Part Two is one of the great joys of the game, in my opinion. So I'm excited for people to discover how they handled it, because that was something for me that watching it, I was like, I repeatedly was like, I love that they're doing this in XYZ way. I don't think people will be disappointed. I don't think it ends and it's
hard
like
to believe.
That was it. I do think it is, you know, it will leave people wanting more. So I'm really glad that they renewed it for season three today, because that has been kind of my big question. Like, how long is the wait going to be between season two and three? And was HBO going to drag its feet on pulling the trigger on that? I think that would have been a recipe for disaster. So I'm glad that they renewed it, because, you know, this is, I will say, this season is not a complete story in the way that season one was. And I think people should go in kind of expecting that. Like, it'll have some resolutions and some full arcs, but it's not going to be complete the same way season one was, where you get done and you're like, whoo, that's, I know, you know, I need to digest this whole thing. People are going to be eager to see what happens after season two.
I expected that. I mean, we're talking a lot about like kind of higher level stuff. I've seen the first four, like I said.
Yeah.
Things in terms of, you're right that it's not as episodic. There are things folk are going to be talking about a lot with each episode.
Oh, absolutely.
Some things that are from the game, and there's a big twist that I think is pretty common knowledge that comes pretty early, and I'm looking forward to seeing how folk anticipate that. But there are also really big things that are not in the game at all. There's a giant action scene I'd love to talk about with you when it comes. I did not see coming. That was entertaining to watch. Robert asked, will I salivate waiting for episode two of seeing the episode one premiere? Again, I think it's too close to the point where I can't really answer you. I think you'll be entertained, Robert.
Totally.
I loved some of the ways, the time they took for the characters. There's a scene, I won't say what episode it's in, where they have like a town meeting that I really, really liked. I thought I was into it. I agree with you, by the way, that Dina, Isabel Merced, is terrific.
So
she
good.
And Ellie have a really, really good chemistry. And whereas Ellie is kind of dour and of the dumps, Dina's very bright and bubbly, but not in a forced way. I really liked watching them together. I completely bought them together in a way that, oh man, I mean, games are different. Like, when I played The Last of Us and The Last of Us 2, I played it like with a buddy. Like, I don't know. To be honest, I'm not really paying attention to the story that much. I mean, it's like I play the game and then it gets there and I'm like, huh, look at it go. Whereas in the TV, that's all I'm looking for. So these things are hitting me harder as a TV viewer than they did as a player, both because it's in a different medium and because they're taking more time to flesh out the story and the character elements. I really like it. Acting, you're right. Tremendous. Pedro Pascal, tremendous.
Yeah.
Bella Ramsey, extremely good. As Matt said, tremendous. They add stuff I love. I really like what Catherine O'Hara brings to it.
Me
as
too.
This new character, Gail. I hope I can say that. Who's not in the game at all.
Yeah.
But she adds really nice layers. She kind of adds a little bit of humor, but not in a forced or like campy or winky or yuck way. I really enjoyed her scenes. I enjoyed a lot of what this show has brought. Yeah, I am very compelled. I want to watch the rest. And I agree with you. The only problem with this is that it's seven episodes. It's not very long.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think so for people who have played the games, it may at times move either slower than you expect or much faster. I think the pacing of this season is really fascinating to me as someone who, you know, likes to really do a close comparison on adaptations. And the game, so The Last of Us Part Two, I did play that one very, like, paying very close attention. And I think it is, like, just a masterpiece in terms of how it plays with perception. Like, I've never played a game where that really buys you into a character to then be like, oh, you're doing a bunch of really awful things and you're going to gradually realize that how bad that is. It's just a very, very smart game. So I think gamers are going to really love this. I think people who've never played the game probably going to really, really love this season, maybe even more. I do think there are some comments I want to hit in the chat. Robert Harris said, and I really need more clickers and such this season, said, I hope we got a giant bloater this season or next. Obviously not going to talk specifics, but I do want to say that I think the idea, people complaining that there weren't enough infected, was a pretty common criticism of season one that I agree with, because after episode five, like, you basically never really see one again. So it's like half the season, we don't really see any infected. The story of this season is very much a human story. Like, it is about the people at the heart of this story. But I do think they heard that criticism because they obviously went a lot. I don't think people will have that criticism about season two, that they wish they were more infected. Let's just say that.
I want to talk to you about that big action scene, because honestly, I have some mixed feelings about it. But there are certainly plenty of zombies in it. I didn't have that complaint about the first season, by the way. I don't have a complaint about this new season. It's like, I don't know. I just want to be entertained. If you can do that with zombies, great. If you do it without zombies, great. I've liked both. I think it's very strong. People are absolutely going to be compelled. And if the internet doesn't melt down a couple of times, I'll be disappointed personally.
Yeah, I agree with that. There are, I can think of off the top of my head, at least two episodes I expect to, as Leo asks, break the internet. Maybe even more than that, but there are two specifically that come to mind where I expect that will be the case. Another character we haven't talked about, but I want to shout out, is Abby, who's played by Caitlin Dever. Very important character from the games, who we're going to see this season. Abby, the show's version of Abby, feels a little different to me than the game version of Abby, who's a very distinctive, her physicality is a very distinctive part of her character in the way she's designed. She's very, very buff. She's got a very angry attitude. I think that the show's version of Abby is more immediately interesting. I think Caitlin Dever does a really good job with her, even if she does feel slightly different. She's one of those characters who it doesn't feel like a carbon copy necessarily, in the way like Pedro Pascal's Joel feels very similar to the game Joel to be. Abby's a little bit different, but I still think she did a really good job. And I'm very excited to see how she's received. Her whole crew is really great as well.
I just watched the episode. I really love Jeffrey Wright as Isaac. I mean, shocker, Wright is good. He's always good in everything, but he was introduced episode and I was like, immediately like, ooh, I'm hooked on this guy. He is a good watch. Everyone brings their A game. There's no problem there.
Yeah, totally. I think, so Jeffrey Wright played Isaac in the video game. And I think bringing him back for this role in the show is a really great opportunity. One, because Jeffrey Wright is like he's never bad in anything. Like, he's just an incredible actor.
He's been crushing it, like, for decades.
But it's also a cool opportunity for the show to kind of expand things with Isaac in some ways, and for Jeffrey Wright to revisit this part and kind of expand it in some ways. Just like, I forget the actress who played Marlene. I forget her name, but the first season did similar things with her, where she played Marlene in the game. They brought her back for the show and gave her a bit more depth. Isaac is talked about a lot in the video game, but you actually really don't see him very much at all. And I think the show, because they have Jeffrey Wright, they're going to show him a little bit more. So yeah, I'm excited to see how people respond to him in the series, because I think all of the cast is just really, really good on this show.
I don't recall Isaac in the game really much at all, but I'm going to recall him from the show.
Yeah, you barely see him. Yeah, in the game, you see him only a little bit, kind of late into the game, but he's talked about an awful lot throughout the whole Seattle section, which is the bulk of the game, like 2/3 of it.
It looks great. Seattle, overgrown, post-apocalyptic, zombie Seattle. Looks incredible. Again, very much, there's some of those, like when they're in the streets, I'm like, that looks a lot like the game looked, which it would, because it's made by Neil Druckmann, who made the game. So it makes sense. It looks like it has depth. It looks like it has tons of detail. It's a gorgeous wreck, this world they live in.
Yeah.
I love the look of Jackson too, kind of like the raising the barn aspect of the community coming together. I love the snow theme. It looks fantastic. Ooh, young Mazzino as Jesse, very, very good.
Yeah.
He makes an impression as kind of this like understated, getter done, kind of all business with a hint of playfulness underneath guy. I thought he stood out, even though he didn't have a ton to do yet. I remember him. Yeah, it's fine on all cylinders. It just went for longer.
Yeah, totally.
Like already, I'm at 4, and I'm like, oh, we're so close to the end already. I don't want it to be that fast.
Yeah,
but I'm definitely enjoying what I'm seeing.
It's funny how like the shorter these seasons get, the more difference like an episode makes, because you know we're in this age of 8-episode seasons. The Last of Us season 2 has 7, so it's only one less than what the average show, a prestige show, is getting at this point. But because the counts are so low, that loss of one episode is like, what do you mean 7? Even though I will say, I do think it was the right choice.
I'm glad to hear that.
That's one thing I should maybe emphasize. I wish there was more, but I think it was the right choice to cap the season where they did. I think in terms of the narrative, it made complete sense. And when I saw it, I was like, yep, that's the right choice. I think I hope they get to production on season 3. And I'm kind of curious, I don't want to say if they filmed any of season 3 while they were working on season 2. I'm curious if they filmed any of season 3 while they were working on season 2, or if they're totally starting from scratch.
You'll see what we're talking about soon enough. Everybody, it airs this Sunday. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yes.
And Daniel and everybody else watching, what are your thoughts on anything else you're watching or reading? Are you watching or reading anything else you want to talk about before we sign off today?
I mean, the big thing is, of course, The Wheel of Time. Still watching. It's airing a big episode this week. It's the Battle of the Two Rivers, which is kind of the other one they're trying to make as almost a barn burner. It's going to have a big battle. Not a spoiler. We've seen it in the trailers. It's a Perrin-centric episode. So obviously, I've really enjoyed that. I'm very excited to see how people respond to it. The other main thing I've watched recently is the Devil May Cry anime. Netflix and Adi Shankar released the anime for Devil May Cry, which is based on a very, you know, popular video game series about this half devil, half human guy with a really bad attitude named Dante, who goes around hunting demons. And I thought it was, I'm going to give the Devil May Cry anime like a 6 out of 10. There were things I really enjoyed about it. I think it gets the bombastic nature of the games. It translates that fairly well. You know, the action is there, but I think it gets into like some political allegory that feels so out of place. Cause like for people who've never played Devil May Cry, like it's essentially like a kind of a take on Dante's Inferno a little bit. Like it often has this main character literally named Dante going into hell to fight off demon lords and then coming back. And, you know, they're always very personal stories, like politics, not really a huge part of this landscape. So to like the end scene of this anime, which I won't spoil, but it is set to American Idiot by Green Day, and it has some very blatant imagery that just I cringed. So yeah, there were parts of it I liked, parts of it I really didn't. 6 out of 10. The 6th episode's really cool, has almost no dialogue. They play with different animation styles. So if you want a kind of easy, fun, but action-packed anime to watch, Devil May Cry is worth checking out, but it probably won't change your life. Unlike, I saw someone shout out Pantheon. Robert Harris said started watching Pantheon. Yeah, that show's excellent. That's a much better show, we'll say.
Good.
Yeah.
What have you been watching? Devil May Cry. I'm glad Julie is enjoying A Wheel of Time and 1923. People are enjoying that.
Nice.
Oh, Leo watched Devil May Cry anime. There you go.
Yeah.
You get someone who's doing it with you.
People who are invested in these games, like, they're going to check it out. Like, I've been playing Devil May Cry since the first one. It has a huge place in my heart. And I don't think this is a total miss. It's just not a total. It didn't totally hit the mark either.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
It's okay.
I'm watching one at a time. This next one is a big one. I'm looking forward to seeing a folk react to it tomorrow. I think it airs. I'm watching The Righteous Gemstones on HBO, which I've liked for a long time. Loving that. I still got to watch the White Lotus finale, but I think it's like an hour and a half. So I'm going to watch it on Friday because I don't know the time this week.
Like, I started that today. Too. Yeah, the new season. It's good.
Walton Goggins. I've realized that Walton Goggins is my favorite actor because he crops up. No, just he stars in like 5 different shows that I like a lot just by pure coincidence.
Yeah.
Like The White Lotus. He's in The Righteous Gemstones. He was in Fallout. And he just like, I guess I love Walton Goggins. He's just everywhere that I am. And yes, Hacks is back this week. I'll watch that too. Julie asks, how's the reading going? It's going. I'm going to finish. I knew we had a ton to talk about this week, so I didn't bother, but I'll sit down and just read the rest of it. It'll be very easy. I love what I've read, and I'm sure we'll have a nice fat episode about it when we're not having to report on early reviews and House of the Dragon and big things. We're going to get it to you. Don't worry.
Yes. Yes.
And thank you for your concern.
Yeah, I know. I'm curious to hear what you think about Dunkin' Egg when the time comes. There's one other thing I need to shout out that I don't think we have in our lightning round, but that dropped today and I'm really excited about. And that's the trailer for Murderbot, which is Apple's next sci-fi show. It's based on a book series by Martha Wells. That looks... Have you seen the trailer, Dan?
I did, yeah, when I entered your post.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks fun.
Yeah, it looks so fun. It's Alexander Skarsgård as this self-hacking security robot who basically hacks his own protocols and gains sentience and free will, but he has to hide it from the humans around him, so he does that mostly by watching soap operas and not paying attention to them. Seems like it's going to be really fun. That premieres on May 16th. So I had to shout it out because that dropped today and I've been very, very excited ever since.
Apple TV Plus, man, they're bringing the sci-fi.
They really are.
Over there, just love it. Tim Cook cannot get enough sci-fi stuff.
Whenever there is a documentary about these dire wolves, it'll probably be on Apple TV Plus.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Even though, I mean, Warner Bros., you've got to jump on this. This is brand awareness for you. You need to do
That's
it.
That's true.
And you got to have George R. Martin as a talking head talking about how much he loved holding the dog.
You're right. You're right. What a licensing nightmare that would be for Apple if they did the documentary, but they had to get permission to use every bit from Game of Thrones they wanted to splice with it, because obviously they would splice Game of Thrones all over it. Having to go beg David Zaslav for that. You're right.
I love it.
It'd be
Leo's right.
Max
Black
one.
Mirror's back next this week. Doctor Who's back this week.
There's so much.
Fine. There is so much.
Andor's coming soon. Later this month. Yeah.
Later the month. And I agree. Eustace Callister. I will watch that.
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk about all this next week. So much to do. Before we get to that, let's do the WIC News Lightning Round, where we go through a bunch of stories. Couldn't get to anybody of the show and give our 20-second opinions, no more, no less. Daniel, why don't you ask me the first one? Because I think I'm going to be in the odd numbered ones for your benefit.
Okay. Jason Momoa has confirmed, spoiler, 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 he is coming back for Dune Part 3.
Yeah, some Dune Part 3 chatter lately. I mean, his character comes back in the next book, so it sounds like a surprise. But his character died in the first movie. So how does that work? Sci-fi nonsense. That's how it works. You'll see when it gets there. Or if you want to hurt yourself and read the Dune books beforehand, you'll see more details. We'll be back. Daniel, speaking of Dune stuff and buzzy celebrities, heartthrob Robert Pattinson is in talks to play the Tleilaxu face dancer villain Skytail in Dune Part 3. Do you ever read Dune Messiah? Do you know who this guy is?
I have, but it's been a while, so I don't remember the details. Do you? Do you want to talk about Skytail here?
No, I asked you.
Okay, so Dune Part 3 gets into, or Dune Messiah gets into all sorts of genetic manipulation to bring back characters who are dead and create clones. And Robert Pattinson is now has a name for himself as a good clone actor. So from Mickey 17. So yeah, he's the obvious shoe in here, even aside from his heart throbbiness. Here's one that I'm curious to get your take on, Dan. Mm-hmm. Meryl Streep apparently is in talks to play Aslan the Lion in Narnia's Netflix's Narnia movies.
What do we make of that? Why not? I'm sure she would sound wise. I know there was some chatter about, like, oh, they're gender flipping it. I mean, like, he's a magical Jesus lion. I don't know. I don't think gender is the most important thing when it comes to Aslan. Sure. Who doesn't love Meryl Streep? Groundbreaking.
Do you think Aslan would still have a mane? That's my main question. Will Aslan have a mane or
no
not?
No idea.
How can they cut Aslan's mane off if he doesn't have one?
With shears?
That's true.
Daniel, the first animated Last Airbender movie, which will have Aang and the gang as adults, or actually, well, it'll be a sequel, will be called The Legend of Aang, coming to a cinema near you.
I don't know why I have middling excitement for this, because it feels like the Last Airbender franchise is just being milked a lot right now.
Yeah.
But this is the people who made the original show. It's an animated movie set during Aang's adult years, so presumably the founding of whatever the city is called from Legend of Korra. I'm sure fans will really enjoy it. I don't know that I'll be watching it.
How nice.
Let's get into some drama. Squid Game star Oh Young-soo, who played the old man villain of the first season, whose name I forget, he's been sentenced to a year in prison for indecent assault.
Yeah, I think actresses complained about him on sets, how he's made kind of sexual passes. I don't know quite how the South Korean penal system works, but he's going to jail for a year. That's kind of all I have to say about it, really. I don't know him. I liked his work as the evil old man, player 001 in Spring Season 1. Yeah, at the end of the season.
Yeah.
That should come back in a few months.
It is.
Daniel, The Handmaid's Tale Season 6 is out. The final season, the first three episodes. People like it. Are you one of them?
I am one of them in spirit. I like that it's being well received. I'm happy for all the people who are enjoying it. I've not watched The Handmaid's Tale. I know it is well beyond the book source material from Margaret Atwood. But this is its final season. They're capping it off and then doing a spin-off show, which is based on another one of Margaret Atwood's books, The Testaments. So yeah, glad it's going well. Hooray for The Handmaid's Tale. Wish we weren't living it. All right. Here's one. We talked about this before the show, and I asked viewers and listeners, I asked what it was, and Dan would not tell me. So now he has to tell me and all of you. Marvel apparently released an 8.5-hour video of Hugh Jackman's Wolverine breathing. Why?
What don't you understand? Marvel released an 8.5-hour video where it's a picture of Hugh Jackman's Wolverine kind of moving up and down and breathing. That's it. It's What's like an ASMR here? Thing. I think it was for like National Stress Awareness Day. It feels like just some kind of ASMR ploy. It's they want to like recapture the magic of that 3-hour chair video or something.
Okay.
It's really weird. I don't know what else to say, but I can feel you like wanting more of an explanation.
I do.
Daniel,
yeah.
There isn't one. It's okay. An 8.5-hour video of Hugh Jackman's Wolverine breathing.
Okay.
That's it.
That's it.
Sorry. We have to. It needed to be said. Okay.
I don't know why they didn't do the Hulk for Stress Awareness Day. It's my day to nitpick. Take that. All Daniel, right. What's our final story?
The third season of Interview with the Vampire, which I like a lot, is probably going to come out next year, 2026.
That is not too far away, but I'm sure longer than fans would like. This season will be a Lestat-centered season. He starts a rock band to tell his side of the story after Louis defamed him in a book. People have been really enjoying Interview with the Vampire, so I'm excited that they have this opportunity to do this season. Can't wait.
Cool. Sorry, Richard. We went over buzzer pretty bad this time. We were gone for a week. We're rusty.
We had to catch up.
We will get our groove back by doing this every week on Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, 3 on the East Coast, noon in the West Coast, and one of the mountains. I can't not say it. I can't leave any of the coasts out. It would offend my OCD-ness. Come back. Listen to us. Watch us. Comment. Engage. Like. Subscribe. Download us in podcast form wherever podcasts are available. And look out for our new 10.5-hour video of me wheezing through my nose. Until then, have a great night. Goodbye.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.